This is Leafs Lunch Playoff Edition with Julia Tesheri and Michael DiStefano on TSN 1050. The playoffs live here.
Let's get down to business. Give you one more night, one more night.
Second hour Leafs Lunch up and running. Mike DiStefano, a.k.a. Al's brother. Got Frank Corrado filling in for Julia Tesheri with me today and all week. Final week of the show here, pal, before summer. Man, did this year ever fly. Did this year ever fly. Oh, gosh,
did it ever. It felt like yesterday that I started doing Leaf games with the Tat Man. And here we are in June saying goodbye to Leafs Lunch for the season.
Yeah, not yet. Still got a few shows to go, my guy. A few shows to go. And speaking of the Leafs.
And we will bring the heat. We will bring the energy every day.
Buds. Lots of heat will be brought over the course of the next 72 hours plus while we kind of close out the show for the week. But speaking of the Maple Leafs, they made a signing today. Timothy Liljegren inked to a two-year contract extension, $1.4 million AAV. What do you think about that number? To me, I looked at that and I said, that seems reasonable, but it's also... Yeah. Not something I expected to see, considering that this team's a bit of a cap crunch. And I recall Travis Dermott, what they did to him. Not what they did, but, you know, he signed, I think it was like an $850,000 or $900,000 contract out of his ELC, just a little tiny bridge. Liljegren actually getting a respectable market value deal, it seems here.
Yeah, I actually thought they could have squeezed him for more. Anytime an RFA who isn't a Marner or Kachuk, or these kinds of players. Anytime you have someone like that, you can pretty much squeeze them for as much as you want because they don't have arbitration yet, and that's the nature of the beast when it comes to this, and then you have to hope that you can make your money afterwards. So I probably thought, maybe $1 million, maybe, but I thought you would have probably, give them the old 925 coming off an entry level. But I guess, does this have anything to do with what his qualifying offer is going to be when he does have arbitration rights? I have a feeling, I thought I read somewhere that the qualifying offer is going to come in at 1.5 when he has arbitration rights. And even that, I think Timothy Liljegren is a good player who had a really good second half of the season playing with Mark Giordano. I don't know if he's ever going to be a guy who makes big money. I just don't know, if he doesn't put up the numbers, if he doesn't play in the top four, if he doesn't take that next step, he could just be a guy who makes 1.4 to 2 million. And maybe that's okay. There's nothing wrong with that. But,
where do you see his ceiling at? He took some big leaps in his game this season, particularly late in the year, right?
Yeah, he did. It's interesting. It's almost harder to judge where he's going to go because I thought at the start of the season he was at times looked out of place, at times played really well. I think the one thing that remained constant is that he has really good poise with the puck and isn't afraid to make plays. And you can see that even when the games aren't going well for him, he still maintains that. So I think that's a great sign. I think where he really needs to get better is understanding the game, understanding the ebbs and flows of a game, understanding the clock, understanding the score, understanding better decision making and reads. Because, you know, if you want to be a top four defenseman at his stature, you know, he's not the biggest guy, he's not the longest guy, you're going to need to really make up for it with your brain. And can he get there? Well, I mean, can the coaches get him there? Can he get himself there? I think that all remains up in the air. But, you know, at 1.4, that's what he is. That's what he is right now. And we'll see what he can get to.
Yep, definitely not going to be a hindrance, I don't believe. He's at least a bottom pair defenseman, and that's great for him. We'll pick up on that. We can pick up on this in a little bit because we got Mike Kelly in the line. And Mike Kelly, an absolute beauty. I love this man. Every time he comes on the show, dropping knowledge left, right, and center.
So informative.
Incredibly informative. He's a hockey analyst specializing in analytics for the NHL Network and Sport Logic. Mike, how are you? I didn't butcher your intro this time.
That was clean. That was really well done. That's a demo reel intro right there. We got to keep that one.
Oh, yeah. It's only because I called you a beauty, isn't it? It's not wrong, though. It's not wrong. Mike, I mean, the eye test checked out last night, but what do the numbers tell us about the clinic that Colorado put on late in that game last night to close it out?
Oh, unreal. It kind of reminded me of what Tampa Bay did in their last game to get to the Cup final. And we've seen Tampa do this, you know, in the season and past playoffs where they've won the Cup. That's what I would call championship hockey. And, you know, I think that's one thing that, you know, as I've followed this team in the playoffs and this year that we don't talk about a lot because, you know, kind of why would you? They score so much. They're so exciting. They have so many superstars. They're a very good defensive team. And as much as I love offense and as much as the way that that's, you know, how the league is trending with as high scoring as it was this year and looking at the teams that are successful, they can all score. You still have to be able to defend, in my opinion. And you can't just run and gun. You can't just play open. Look what happened to Florida when Tampa jammed them up and took their rush offense away. Scored 3 goals in 4 games. So that's what impressed me so much about Colorado is you go into the third period, you're up by a goal, and you're playing the two-time champs, and you need to defend that lead. They allow 4 shots. They didn't allow a single shot attempt from the most high-danger area on the ice, the inner slot. Nothing. Nothing. And they kept, you know, a decent forecheck going. It wasn't as aggressive, but they kept pushing the pace. They had a couple chances of their own. It was clinical. And I think it was a fitting end for a team that scored over four goals a game in the playoffs. It was such an offensive juggernaut to show that they can do that to win a championship.
Mike, what do you make of the goaltender narrative? Because it seems like every year, you know, we talk about how you need the bona fide number one, the stud guy to win you the Stanley Cup. And that is true for a lot of years. But this year seems different because Darcy Kemper, who, you know, he's not Vasilevsky, but he's a good goaltender in the league. He's definitely above average in the league. Like, do you think the fact that he wins the Cup now, does that show that, you know, if you defend well enough and you have a great offense and you outscore the few kind of goalie gaffes throughout a playoff run, the true number one star goaltender isn't necessarily a must to win a Cup?
Look, I don't know if anything's a must. I think this is an outlier. And I would say unless you're the Colorado Avalanche, go get yourself a very good goalie if you want to try to win a Stanley Cup. And, and look, I like Darcy Kemper. He is a good goalie. I'd say he's certainly an above-average goalie. He's not better than Andrei Vasilevsky. He wasn't better than Vasilevsky in the final. And, you know, if you just look at things like save percentage and goals against average, it does not take into account a massively important variable in goaltending, which is how difficult are the shots that you're facing. And in the Stanley Cup final, expected goals, so this is the goal probability of the shots that you are facing, the equalizer to add quality into this mix, not just the shot total. For Colorado, it was 26 expected goals. And for Tampa Bay, it was 13. So Vasilevsky saved his team a lot of goals with his play, and Kemper played it right around average, a little less than expected, which was okay. That was always going to be okay for Colorado if he could just kind of stop what he should stop. And that's what he did. And, you know, there were a couple games where there were some bad goals, and Tampa won a couple games. Colorado outplayed Tampa Bay so significantly that that series could have been over in 4. It could have been over in 5. And I give Tampa a lot of credit. We saw how they laid, you know, bodies on the line, and they have guys in there that are bruised and banged up. And to push it to 6 and to push it to a 1-goal game, I give them so much credit. I would be careful, though, about saying, you know, because I think Kemper's like a platoon guy, ideally. I don't think he's an elite number one starter. So I'd just be careful. Unless you are the Colorado Avalanche, a juggernaut, you probably still need a very good goalie to win a Stanley Cup.
Well, this juggernaut went 16-4 in the playoffs, tied a record for most wins in a full season, including regular and playoffs. They scored more goals than anyone else and were also the best team defensively, giving up a playoff low 2.01 expected goals through 60 through the playoffs. They never seem to be overwhelmed at any point. Like, where does this Cup run stand in terms of maybe pure dominance to recent wins?
Yeah, it's a good question. So I haven't, you know, fine-tooth combed it to kind of rank it, I guess. But, yeah, 16-4 and how dominant they were doing it, it's up there. It's got to be up there with the all-timers. And you probably have to separate it from the years where you only had to win 8 games back in the day to where we're at now, which is winning, you know, best-of-7, 4 series. In terms of best-of-7, 4 series, it's got to be right in the among the best to ever do it, just because, you know, again, they only lost four games. It was only one series. St. Louis pushed them. They really did push them. And Tampa put up a hell of a fight, but I think Colorado still dominated that series in a way that they didn't against St. Louis. The Blues, you know, losing Binnington was big, but they did push them. So other than that, I mean, it was a sweep over Nashville. It was a sweep over Edmonton. It was incredibly impressive. And like you said, it's not just the 16-4, but it's how they did it, right? The highest scoring playoff team, the best expected goals against, that's team defense independent from goaltending. And Kemper, still good. The guy won a Stanley Cup, so, you know, still good. And, yeah, they'll go down as one of the best ever. That was incredible to watch.
Yeah, and it's been quite the week, quite the playoffs for Cale Makar, securing the Stanley Cup, Conn Smythe, and the Norris. That's pretty good if you ask me. But, Mike, like, how unprecedented has Makar's rise to NHL stardom been?
Oh, you probably have to go back. For his position, you probably have to go back to Bobby Orr, right? Wow. There were years where Bobby Orr did these things, but he also won a scoring title. It's Bobby Orr, so... but no, really, like, since who are the great defensemen since? Like, you're putting it at
like
the very top
Ray
of the
Bork
list.
In there, like
Ray Bork.
I'm trying
there,
to think
Nick
of guys
in there.
But Carlson, yeah, Lidstrom didn't win Norris
until his 30s.
Yeah.
So
right.
We're talking about what Cale Makar is doing at 23. What he's already done at 23.
It's incredible.
I think you top of my head. I think you'd have to go back to Bobby Orr, who did more impressive things. But again, it's Bobby Orr. So
right. Yeah. Also a different time, different game at that time as well.
Yeah, sure. And if you're doing those things, like what he's doing at that position, it's McDavid of defensemen. He's the Connor McDavid of defensemen. Like, those two guys, to me, for what they do, they're so unique. What other defenseman do you compare Cale Makar in the game to today? I don't think there's any.
No,
because
no.
Roman Josi's got
one.
A lot of that off. Yeah. Yeah, like Josi's got a lot of that offensive ability, but not at Makar's level. And Hedman, his all-around game is incredibly impressive. But, man, Cale Makar, the way he can skate, the way he moves, puts up points, good defensively. And that's one of the things I really started to appreciate covering the West Final in person and being here in Denver, is he defends well. And it's because he can close, right? Like, you know, he's he had a couple lapses towards the end in the final. Pilat. Yeah, he lost his guy on that one, and then the turnover on the first goal in game six. But, you know, whatever. Like, we're nitpicking here. So,
yeah, exactly.
Sorry, he's not perfect, everybody. but
yeah.
It's crazy, man. He could win a league MVP one day. I think he could be a Hart Trophy guy, which is nuts.
Well, it's funny. They say that, you know, you don't really know what you are in the NHL as a defenseman until you play, what's the number, 200 games in the NHL?
Oh, that's just an old thing they used to say. Like,
I know.
To justify draft picks. That's honestly what I think. Like, you just justify your draft picks. Say, no. He needs 100 more games. Then we'll know. Then we'll know what he is.
But honestly, Cale Makar has only played 178 regular season games, and he's already getting compared to Bobby Orr at 23 years old. That's the point I'm making. Like, that's how quick of an impact this guy's made on the NHL. It's absolutely
it's
amazing.
Crazy.
So I don't, I'm with you. I don't know if you can really look at like that meteoric rise to stardom, and you know, I don't know if anyone's done that recently. In conversation with Mike Kelly,
you know who else is really good? Speaking of young defensemen, the guy who's 20, Bo Byram.
Oh yeah, he's a player.
So
just
Bo
unfazed. Unfazed with like no experience in the NHL. The guy played like,
so much poise.
You know, 30 games this year and 50 total games. And yeah, he played with a bunch of different D partners too, right? Well, you could appreciate that, what that must be like.
100%. 100%.
He played in the final.
Not...
Yeah, with four different guys a lot.
Yeah.
Well, I was taking a look at the note, and like metrically speaking, Byram and Eric Johnson, they were together. One of the best pairings of the entire playoffs. And one of the more underrated storylines that I took from this cup final was Byram versus Kucherov. Those two were like at each other throughout the entire series. You guys notice that at all?
Yeah. I mean, I kind of noticed Kucherov getting frustrated with a lot of guys. Kucherov, I think, was trying to do a lot in the end, and you know, he was hobbled a little bit. like a lot of guys, but the fact that, you know, Byram can go hang in there with him, they got in that scrum, obviously, where they were going at it. Yeah, impressive to watch, because even Kucherov being in the state he was in was still pretty dynamic and could still beat you one-on-one, but you know, Byram never looked out of place in these playoffs at all.
Yeah,
Mike, and you know, we were talking to Jamie McLennan earlier, and we kind of asked him the same question about the NHL. It is a bit of a copycat league. I can tell you firsthand, I've been in meetings where coaches or whoever saying, yeah, we want to play more like L.A. at the time. It was more like Chicago at the time. It was Boston and so on and so forth. But this year, if you wanted to mimic this Avs team, other than finding Cale Makar, like, is there anything that other GMs are going to try and do to replicate this team? Because it doesn't seem like it's going to be something that's easy to do.
No. I mean, they got Makar fourth, right, by losing a lottery. And we don't know. Maybe they take him first that year. Kind of hard time believing that, but maybe. Bowen Byram, great trade. They got him the Matthew Shain trade with Sam Girard. So really good moves for the front office. I'll pump the tires of their analytics department, led by Eric Parnas, because I know what a great job he's done for them there and how he thinks about things and interprets data. That's helped. You want to mimic the Colorado Avalanche. Like, the thing to me that impresses so much, you know, you got your superstar players and all that, which you need, but as fast as they play up the ice with that offense and that talent and skill, they get back and their rush defense is so good. And that's work. That's really work ethic and intelligence is much more than skill. From the conversations I've had with players on that team and players in general, they'll always say defense is hard work before anything else, and they do it. So if you're a GM and you're looking to try to mimic what Colorado's doing, and you know, there's the things that you need that are givens, which is star players, etc. But find players that are fast, that can think the game well, and who work going up and coming back, and you can maybe start to mirror a little bit of the type of success that Colorado's had.
So Cale Makar ends up taking home the Conn Smythe as the best player throughout the playoffs as a whole. If there was an MVP for the Stanley Cup final by itself, who would you have given it to, Mike?
Ooh. Well, Makar would have been in a conversation. I think, you know, his play, it was a little more up and down in the final. Mm-hmm. Val Nichushkin would have been serious consideration. I think he had 4 goals. He was outstanding.
I think that's my
Gabe Landeskog. Yeah, you would have gone to Shuskin?
I think so. He was so dominant. Like, in multiple games, he looked like the best player on the ice. Like, game one, yeah, for sure. He was so good last night again. Like, multiple games where I came away thinking, this guy's going to get, like, $6 million this offseason. Like, he's just, every game, the guy was just adding $1 million to the end of his total AAV this summer. I swear to goodness.
Oh, he picked a great time to pop. You're right. Yeah. Like, I remember game one, too. I'm like, he was the best player on the ice. And he had other games where he was very, very good. The only other guy I'd throw in the mix would be Gabe Landeskog, who had 3 goals and puck battles, block shots. The guy won a ton of faceoffs, winning them clean, too, at both ends of the ice. Just a hugely valuable player for them. So I thought he had an outstanding final. But yeah, Nichushkin would have been in there as well for sure.
Mike, looking ahead to next season, looks like Vegas has Toronto as the next best cup odds after Colorado for next year. Do you still look at Tampa? I don't know. Like, do you still look at Tampa as the team to beat in the East next year? Because I look at them and I look at the core that they have. I look at the goaltender they have, the pieces that are coming back, and John Cooper, and the fact that they're always able to address the needs that they need at the deadline. Like, how are they not the favorites to come out of the East next year?
I have no idea. Watching the game for the last couple of years, I have no idea how that would be the case. So I guess put your money on Tampa, getting good
right
odds.
Yeah, there's some value.
Look, Toronto's a very good team. We know that, right? And they went 7 with Tampa, and it was a 1-goal game. I get it. But what's the sample size over the last few years? Toronto hasn't won a playoff round still. And, you know, they're always there, and they always get a tough team, and I get all that. There's some reality to it, but I've said this for years, and this goes back to when Kadri was traded for Kerfoot and Barry. I think there's fatal flaws in the way that they built that team. And what you see over the last, you know, several years with other teams that are very good, just like Toronto, very good teams, how do you fill it in? And look at how Tampa Bay filled their team in to surround their superstar players. Look at how Colorado filled their team to surround their superstar players. And then you can look at Toronto and what they've done to do the same. There's differences there. And so look, Toronto, if they can get past the first round, they're a very good team. But given what we know, I don't know how you would bet against Tampa in terms of what team should come out of the East, because
we don't know who's going to be the goaltender for Toronto. Like, we don't even know who's going to be in net. Like, right now, you have Peter Mrazek. As of if the season started today, that's your starting goaltender. So I don't know how that gives you the best odds in the East to win the Stanley Cup.
I also don't know. But again, if you're a better, good news for you, I suppose.
Yeah, there's some value on Tampa. I think it was plus 1,000 for Tampa to win the Cup next year. And Colorado, obviously, with the best odds to try and repeat as champions. And I mean, it's tough to say they can't. It's really tough to say they can't. It was such a dominating victory for them right from start to finish. Mike, really appreciate you taking the time to join us as always, pal. Enjoy your summer, and thanks so much for joining us this season.
You guys did an awesome job. I'm happy to do it, and looking forward to next season already.
Oh, yeah. Hey, there is no off season. Let's be honest. It's a hockey 365.
Not on Leafs launch here.
No, hey, and not on Leafs awesome. Launch and not in Mike Kelly's world.
That's right. In an awesome hockey market like Toronto, there's no off season, and that's why it's the best. Love it.
No. Yeah, we're going to spend the next, 2 months just talking about goalies and prospects and what trades. Oh, trust me. We'll have tons of stuff to talk about over the next little bit. But, no, as always, I appreciate you taking the time, Mike.
All right, anytime. Thanks, guys.
All right. There he goes. Mike Kelly, hockey analyst specializing in analytics for the NHL Network and SportLogic. He's, perfect when it comes to, explaining why analytics are so, I don't want to say key, but, he's the type of guy that turns numbers into words so profoundly, and it just makes sense.
He's a great follow on Twitter. Every time he tweets something, it's very informative, but he tweets about things in a way that you can understand it and apply it to the game. The way I like to explain it, he takes the numbers and puts them onto the ice rink for you so you can understand it, right? So it doesn't seem like there's sometimes you see numbers and you see percentages and graphs or whatever. It's like, okay, that's great, but what does it mean, really? And he's the guy who can really make that connect between the two. So he does a great job. I love following him on Twitter. It's been very informative.
Absolutely. And I know you are, you're a 50-50 guy. You think the numbers have a place in the world.
For
but
sure. I'm not anti-numbers. I'm not anti-analytics. I'm not anti-numbers or whatever. I just, I appreciate the fact that a guy like Mike Kelly can make them more applicable to what actually happens on the ice.
Absolutely. But I was going to talk about the heat map from last night, your favorite. Oh.
What do we got?
Heat map crew.
What do we got?
Buds. So, the heat map last night, and you take a look, and Mike Kelly said it, they had one shot from the inner slot last night, Tampa Bay did, and it turned out to be the goal that Steven Stamkos scored, but they didn't get a single shot, and I think it's, 80% of the goals are scored from the inner slot, and they didn't get not one opportunity from there outside of that initial goal in the first period from Stamkos. Not many slot shots in general, and you look at the heat map, it's pretty barren out in front of the crease.
It doesn't lie, hey?
It's pretty barren in front of the crease. Meanwhile, you look on the other side, it's a pretty big red blob right out in front of the goal mouth there for the Colorado Avalanche. The heat map don't lie, and the same is true in any contact sport, right? The game is won between the trenches, whether you're talking about football, basketball. Hockey's the same, right? You got to work hard to win your net front battles. And Colorado worked a little bit harder and were able to win those battles and didn't allow Tampa to get in front of the goalie and get those looks, get those opportunities. But they made sure that they did get those looks and opportunities. And ultimately, they're Stanley Cup champions today because of it, because they won the trench battle more times than not.
Gotta be in the trenches. What do you call the trenches? Is it the bench? Is it in front of the net? I like to consider, if I'm on the bench, I'm in the trenches with the troops, and then I'm heading out to the battlefield on the ice. And, now we're gonna
that's the gonna... that's that's a little bit more
playoffs,
like
especially
metaphorical, right? Those are the metaphorical trenches. But the literal trenches for me, right in the inner slot, right in front of the net, right? Right where, you know, we saw Kucherov and Manson battling, right? Where Devontae's and Stamkos battling, battling in front of the net.
Funny you mentioned that. So my wife, I was watching the game with my wife last night, and she asked me, she goes, you know, at this point in this kind of game, is everyone just like, doesn't matter? Like, puck can hit me anywhere, and I'm just going to take it, and that's okay? And I'm like, yeah, pretty much. That's how it goes at this juncture in the game.
Yes, exactly. This is it. This is do or die. We got to win this game. You didn't want to take that to a game seven. Not against that squad, Colorado. Definitely not. All right, on the other side, former Colorado Avalanche, former Stanley Cup champion, Dave Reed, also a TSN hockey analyst, going to join us on the other side. Got to find out if he was at Vinnie Paul's place when the cup got dented. Got to figure that out. That's the main goal. That's what we got to find. Pull from the interview with Dave Reed.
I will find out.
Got to figure out if he was there and what exactly went down during the 99 Cup party after the Dallas Stars won it. So Dave Reed up next. I'm Mike DiStefano with Frank Corrado. You're listening to Leafs Lunch here on TSN 1050.
This is Leafs Lunch on TSN 1050. The Leafs live here.
Welcome back into Leafs Lunch. I'm Mike DiStefano, a.k.a. Al's brother. Got Frank Corrado, former Toronto Maple Leafs defenseman, with me, filling in for Juliet Teixeira for the week.
Former Sudbury Wolf, too, and the person we're going to have on the line here next, Dave Reed.
Wolf alum?
No. I don't know, but he was the general manager of the Peterborough Petes when I played in the OHL. So I would have gone up against Dave Reed and his squad many a times at the Sudbury Community Arena at the Peterborough, I don't know what it's called, but that Peterborough Arena used to drive me insane because
who was on that team at the time? I've never been there. No.
Who would have been on Peterborough at the time? Like Matt Pumple, remember him?
Oh, yeah. I thought Matt Pumple was going to be a player, man. You played with him at one point,
didn't
you?
Yeah, good goal scorer. Yeah, I played with him in Kitchener afterwards. They had some good players there in Peterborough, but the rink in Peterborough, it's like a weird rectangle box thing, so you'd go in the corners or you'd go rim a puck around the boards, and it's very unpredictable. It's a weird rink. We got to ask Dave, like, what's the deal there? And then we got to ask Dave too if he ever tried to trade for me.
Well, he's on the line right now. We could ask him. Dave Reed, 18-year NHL veteran, won two cups, one with the Colorado Avalanche, also won one with the Dallas Stars, which we'll definitely get into in a moment, but a TSN hockey analyst and former general manager in the CHL as well. Dave, how are you?
I'm doing well, guys. How about you?
Oh, we're doing fantastic. Not sure if you heard, but Frank Corrado is wondering if you ever tried to trade for him with your time when you were with the Petes.
No, Blaine wasn't letting anybody go when I was trying to get good players.
I was one of Blaine's first picks that he ever made as general manager, so I think there was a little sentimental value there.
Yeah, no, I know that feeling. No, I got in there the 2 years I was there. It was quite an interesting time I was there, but we were trying to bring in some younger guys and add a couple of veterans here and there and change things up because we had a lot of draft picks. So it was an interesting time for my 2 years in Peterborough, to say the least. But I made a lot of different trades here and there. Some players requested it, other players didn't. And we moved some because we were bottom of the pack, not in the playoffs the couple years I was there. So we moved players to, like typical junior, you move players out to the teams that are looking to win championships.
London, and pick up
draft picks.
Same guys every year.
Yeah, exactly. And then you hope those draft picks, you can get lucky on a couple late picks type of thing, and that's how you build your team.
Okay, before we get into it, I got to ask you, Dave, what's with the boards at the arena in Peterborough? Why are they like that? Why can't they just have normal boards?
You know what? I think that looking back at some old photos of NHL and original rinks, the arenas, a lot of arenas were configured that way. And this was the way the building was built back in, post-war time as the Memorial Center. And they've never changed it. And actually, I kind of like it. We still skate there with a bunch of guys, a bunch of ex-Petes, and guys on a Tuesday night, and everybody who knows the rink, you know how to shoot the puck around the boards. If you you got to keep it right on the boards. If it's 6 inches off the boards, it bounces out in front of your net, no matter which way you're passing it. But it is very interesting, and I actually. Fact that rinks were different. You know, when I played, all rinks were a little bit different. You know, that's why they were called barns. Some of them aren't the size of a barn. I remember Windsor was tiny, and all rinks were different. And now they're all cookie cutter, you know, and I was fortunate enough to play in the old Boston Garden, which was smaller than most, and then the Buffalo played in the Memorial Auditorium. That was smaller. Chicago was smaller. Every rink had its own character to it, and I'm glad the Petes, when they changed or they redid the boards and the flooring surface a few years back, I'm glad they didn't change it, because it adds that you know, that nostalgia to the rink, and I'm all for building big new rinks and allowing more people to get in. I know it's all about revenue and money, but I also, you know, everybody in Peterborough, there's no way anybody would have allowed them to put in proper, you know, the newer style corners. Because the hometown advantage isn't there. Hey, when I played, this is how crazy it was. When I was there, I played there in 81. I was there for 3 years, from 81 to 84. And when I became GM, I hired Ron Tugnutt as an assistant coach and goalie coach. So Tugger would be doing drills, and he's like, this one end is off. I'm like, what are you talking about? He says, the net, it's off. I'm like, it's not off, Tugger. Like, the rinks, they've been in the ground forever since the rink was built. The posts are where the... He said, I don't care. This side, this ends off. So we pulled the measuring tape out. We're done practice, pulled measuring tape, and sure enough, the posts at, I guess it would be the south end, were off by about almost an inch. They were moved over. And I'm like, how'd you know? He says, well, when you come out, you telescope out of your net, you know, all the dots and everything, the measurements are all the same from the net out in every rink. And he's like, when you come out, he says, my angle's off. I'm trying to get my goalies to do this. And I'm just chuckling. He goes, oh my God, can we fix this? And the rink guy's like, no, we got to drill new holes, and we'd probably drill into the posts or into the pipes in the bottom. So I don't know. I was gone before they did the renovation. I'm not sure if they actually, when they renovated, I'd hope when they renovated, they put new posts in.
Yeah, let's hope so.
Right. But not only were this quarter square, but the goalies for the home team might be off their angle just a little bit. And it was that was the fun of the old rinks.
That's funny. That is funny. In conversation with Dave Reed, played a long time in the NHL, won a couple of cups. In the final game of his NHL career, able to lift the Stanley Cup as a member of the Colorado Avalanche. I mean, can you describe the feeling of kind of hoisting the cup, and then, you know, what do you think was going through the minds of guys like Andrew Cogliano and Eric Johnson as they finally became world champions?
Yeah, I was there in 99 when I won with Dallas. I was 15 years into my career. You know, they always say I played 18 different years in the NHL, but my last one was my final year junior, where I was called up for about 8 games with the Bruins. But I was 15 years pro. And I was one of a couple of guys who had played a long time, much like these guys, you know, Johnson and Cogliano and, you know, the Borks of the world, that type of thing, who you know, you might only get that one shot. And that was my first cup final in 99. And it was, I mean, it was incredible. It was like a euphoria. You're like, you're so focused when you're playing, and you learn, especially on good teams, you learn not to worry about the outcome, but worry about the process and what you're doing to get there. And, you know, and that pretty much goes down from period to period, to shift, 5-minute segments, and you break it down. So when it's done, and all of a sudden you're given the cup, and that was what could hit. It was like, oh my gosh. And it was just brought back like memories of everything you've done as a kid, playing in the street, playing in the basement with your brothers, your parents, you know, the early morning practices, everything. And that's kind of, you know, that's really what you see, the emotion of the guys. And it's 2 months of the hardest hockey ever played, but it goes away quickly when you're holding the cup. And then, you know, I remember when I had it, I was looking for, like everybody does, you know, where your parents or your family are in the stands. So, you know, I tried to grab the cup and take it to where they were, because that's what it's all about. It's all about your family. But that, at that time, that was the emotions that hit you. It's just like, you know, your whole life, since you can recall being a hockey fan, little kid, you know, I grew up in Toronto, so you had to cheer for the Leafs. you know, and you wanted to hold the Stanley Cup in every game you played, everything you did. So it all kind of comes back at that moment, and you see it in the interviews after the game, post game interviews, and guys talking, and the emotions are there. And it's not the emotions of finishing the season; it's the emotions accomplishing really a lifelong dream. And I think it's, you know, a lot of people say who don't play sports, it's, you know, I've got two children. It's like having a child. It's like, oh my gosh, you know, it's an absolutely incredible experience. To you know, set your goals on things, and then it happens, and it's like, wow, it's actually happened. So, and I was fortunate; I got it again 2 years later, and it was my final game, which was pretty cool. That I look back on it now, that I've wrapped up my career in a game seven in New Jersey, you know, one with Colorado. So, watching it all last night brought back all those emotions again. It's funny, you know, my wife and I will sit and we'll watch the games. So you don't really focus that much on the games. I'm watching the games and we're chit-chatting and doing different things. But then it's, you know, we're waiting for all the interviews afterwards because that's the emotion comes back in us when we're watching it and watching the guy speak on the ice through all the interviews. And I still go back and I'll still flip through them to make sure I kind of catch everybody's. And I mean, it's what you play for since I can remember.
Yeah, I'm a bit of a softie in that way too. I was up till maybe 3-4 in the morning, just scouring, looking for everything that everyone was talking about. Wanted to see all the locker room celebrations, all that, because I'm just a suck when it comes to watching that. But maybe the biggest mic drop moment was Nazem Kadri and what he had to say after winning the Stanley Cup. But I mean, what a storybook ending for that guy. Like, it was just such a roller coaster season, having an MVP worthy year prior to getting injured, returns to the playoffs, goes through, you know, the unfortunate circumstance in St. Louis, only to shut him up with a hat trick the next game, gets injured in game four of the cup final, supposed to be a 6-week timeline for this injury. They somehow return him to the ice in 2 weeks, scores the overtime game winner in his return, and finally gets to hoist the cup last night. Can't script it any better than that, can you?
No, I agree. And I was so happy to see Nazem Kadri win it. I don't know Naz personally, you know, being an Leaf alumni and doing different events and stuff, I'd met him. And when they traded him, I understood that the trade, I thought it was a good trade when they made the trade with the Avs a couple of years back. And it was a tough one because, they, you know, he's a back-to-back 32 goal scorer when the Leafs traded him. The Leafs need a right-shot defenseman. They got the right-shot defenseman. Colorado need a second-line center. They got their second-line center. Great trade for both teams, everybody thought. Turned out, obviously, a little bit better, much better for the Avalanche. And for Naz, he's a UFA at the right time. But it's interesting. I texted, there's only a few people left on the organization. I was texting last night and this morning, and I got a hold of their trainer, Matt Sokolowski, and I texted him and was congratulating him. And I just said, you know, he does all the work behind the scenes, the trainers. You know, I said, getting guys healthy and getting guys on the ice and keeping that team going, like Nichushkin and Kadri, you know, the latest injuries. And he even said, he texted me back, he said, you know, Naz worked his ass off to get back on the ice. And he said, unbelievable how the time and effort he put in to get back on the ice. And it paid dividends. But, you know, I look back on up in Toronto with Nazem Kadri, and that's the learning factor. And I absolutely loved his comments last night, because so many people are like, he's this, he's that, you know, he always got suspended, he couldn't control himself. It's like, you know what? It's a learning experience playing in the playoffs. And when you don't get past the first round, or you don't even get into the first round, how do you learn, you know, what it's like to play in the second round, what it's like to play in the third round? And the injury with Bennington, I've watched that over and over and over again. And I'm like, seriously? Like, people are saying that's intentional. It's like you're driving the net for a puck, and you get a little shove. And I'm thinking, come on. Like, I remember, I think it was Nick Kypros fell into Grant Fuhr years ago. That was intentional. I'm pretty sure it was Kipper. You know, and that's when you fell on the other team's goal. You're standing in the crease. You just fall on him. They wouldn't call any penalty. And I think he injured Fuhr, and he was out of the playoffs in that year. And you know, then the hit that he took, you know, from Kane, I would have given Kane a lot more than one game for that. Yeah. And to come back with that injury that he's got, I've broken a finger. And Frank, you've probably done the same thing. You get an injury, and you're like, especially in your hands, you're trying to hold your stick. You know, it's tough. And other teams know it. They're whacking and they're hacking and they're leaning on you, and it's tough. And You know, so for me, I was like, good for him, man. That is a guy who's battled hard, who has gone through adversity. I remember when he started with the Leafs, everybody was, oh, he's too heavy, he's too fat, he's not, you know, they're sending him to the American League. It's like, ah, this guy's not going to train properly. I'm like, are you kidding me? They used to say about Brett Hull. Not that I'm comparing Kadri to Hull, but I played with Brett Hull in Moncton, and they're like, oh, you got to lose weight. You're not going to play in the NHL if you don't lose weight. Crispy was our coach there way back when in the mid-'80s. And Holly was like, you know, he scored 50, won the Rookie of the Year in the American League, and then went on to be Brett Hull in the National League. And it's, you know what, you've got your style, you play your style, you keep doing what you do, and it's been successful for Nazem Kadri. And I was, you know, I thought I was really happy to see him hoisting the cup, and I loved his comments. I thought they were priceless.
Dave, I want to ask you because, you know, so I've been to the AHL finals, the Calder Cup finals, and you've won two Stanley Cups. But when you look back at your time going on long playoff runs, are there certain memorable moments that stick out? And maybe it might not be in the games. It could be the traveling, the dinners, the extra time you get to spend with teammates. But maybe you can just touch on that and just what that experience is like as a group, you know, when you're just together for so long and just, you know, working towards a goal, you know, in those kinds of circumstances.
Yeah, Frank, it's really, it really is. You become a family. You're always a family when the good teams, you get there and you have that long run, but you pretty much in a hotel, even at home, we're in the hotel nights before the game. And I was fortunate late in my career with both Dallas and Colorado. They offered it as optional if you wanted to stay in the hotel or you wanted to go home. Some teams, it's like, nope, you're in a hotel right away. And that's how it goes throughout the playoffs. But some of the fun experiences, more the fun experiences. So I remember, we're on the plane in Buffalo. We're coming back from Buffalo and we had, we had lost the game. I don't know, it was like 2-1 or something. And we were going back home. It might have been game 5 or game would have been. We're heading back. I can't remember which game it was, but we're heading back home. I think it was after game 4. And Ed Belfour, I mean, this is how close we were. We lost the game like 2-1 or something. And it was Hasek against Belfour. And Eddie got up on the plane and he just unloaded on guys. Like he was just, you know, because we were on the plane going back. We were all pretty confident. We had a really good team, a bunch of Hall of Famers. And he was like, he just unloaded on guys because it was like, he was like, you know, we're not taking this serious enough. And Eddie hadn't won, and Eddie was, you talk about a serious player. Eddie was, you know, very, very serious. And, when he was in game mode and I remember just sitting there and, you know, some of the things, you know, we had a great, fantastic team, great run in 99, but that was one of the things that really stood out was Eddie getting up and just, you know, just blasting guys for not being as focused as we needed to be. And it's like we lost that game 2-1. We ended up coming back. I can't remember if we won game 5, but we ended up winning game 6 as well to win it. But that was the one in Colorado. And in Denver, it was interesting because with Ray on the team, everybody was, oh, you're going to win it for Ray. And we were, you know, I think it was Aaron Miller who got traded to Los Angeles with Adam Dedmarsh at the trade deadline for Steven Reinprecht and Rob Blake. Aaron Miller was always saying, no, we don't, because Ray had come in the year before. A lot of people think, you know, we don't really remember because it was so long ago that Ray came in at trade deadline and we won. Well, he came in the year before and we lost in the conference final to Dallas in 2000. And the comments were always, you know, oh, you're going to win it for Ray. And Aaron was like, no, we're going to win it with Ray. And that was kind of the whole theme of our 2001, because, you know, I'd known Ray for a long time since I was drafted in 82 at Boston. And a few of the guys, you know, the older guys like me and Patrick and Footy and Joe and these guys, they knew that this was Ray's final year, that he pretty much decided he wasn't going to come back. And after 22 years, I think it was 22, I don't blame him. He ended up being first-team All-Star when he retired, too. Like, that's incredible. Retires, yeah. Wins the Cup, first-team All-Star, and he could have continued to play if he wanted to. But that was the fun part of that one. I remember coming into the room, we're in Game 7, and when we were on the road in Colorado, if we had even numbers of players, not like today where, you know, we could carry as many as you wanted, but if you had like 20 guys or 22 guys, everybody roomed, you doubled up. So I was Ray's roommate. So because I was kind of I'd known Ray a long time, and all the other guys' roommates were kind of set. So I was Ray's roommate. So if there was 21 guys or 23 guys, Ray had his own room, and I would share with one of the younger guys. And so we're in the final game I decided to go home and have a pregame nap at home. I much preferred my pregame naps at home. And Ray had stayed at the hotel. And I can remember coming in, and we had been rooming on the road the night before we get back. And I walk into the room. We sat beside each other. Locker. I said, "Hey, Bubs, how's the nap today?" And he cursed me up and down. He was so nervous. And he was just like, "Oh, my gosh." And I said to him, I said, "Hey, I said, look at it this way, bud. I said, we don't have to come to the rink tomorrow." I said, "That's a good one way to look at it." Because he was so stressed. It was game seven, and I had won 2 years before, and I was so confident with our team at that point. Game six, sorry for stretching this out a little longer. Game six, we had lost in New Jersey, and in the first period, we got outshot, I don't know, like 15 or 20 to 5 or something like this. It was crazy. Patrick stood in his head, and Adam Foote put a floater in from the blue line on Brodeur, and we went up 1-0. We won that game 4-0, dominated the second and third. I was so confident coming home. I was like, we are all over these guys. We got this, and we won the game 3-1, pretty much dominated the game. So I was all sorts of, you know, fully confident that we're going to win this. Like, this is our cup. We're at home. This is fantastic. And Ray, that was the one thing I can remember that of that run, because that was the final game, and Ray was just so stressed. Until you get going, you get out there and warm up, and then he starts to chill and relax. And he was always, you know, he was always pretty light about things, and he was never, he was serious, but he never really had to show it. But he was always, you know, he'd always be joking and stuff. But those are the two things I remember in both the runs.
Dave, I got about 10 seconds here for you, but I got to know, on a scale of 1 to 10, how crazy was the party at Vinnie Paul's place when the cup got dumped?
That was a good party.
I would imagine so. And what happens at Vinny's place stays at Vinny's place. You know, I'm sure.
That's right, Al's brother. Yeah. It's not for radio.
I just wanted a scale from 1 to 10. That's all I wanted. And I
assumed
give
you 1 10. To 10. I'd probably give you about an 11. You have to make the scale bigger than 10.
I heard it was quite the party. Quite the party.
Oh, you know what? I think there are all sorts of parties like that go on. And it's just, I mean, it's remarkable. I mean, I love listening to the old, like the guys, the Oiler guys, and they're telling stories. But this is before the cup used to travel, so I got less than more than 10 seconds. But the cup used to travel. And they'd take a place, and they'd forget it. They'd walk away here. They'd leave there. And I loved it when, was it Big Lebel dropped it last night and dented it?
At the end,
that was good. But hey, quick story. Sean Podine comes over to our place. This is after he chased everything. So I had the cup over at my place afterwards. We were partying and met everybody. And he's like, I'm going to sleep over. I'm not going home. So he went upstairs and he jumps on the spare room bed. And he's got the cup in his arms and he dozed off. And boom, he rolls over a little while later. Smack, we're all downstairs. What the hell? We go upstairs and the freaking cup had been jammed into the wall, into the drywall, come out. And I had the same dent in it. Flipped it upside down the next morning. I'm tapping it out with my little hammer. Fortunately, I had a few extra little tools, and I was not bad at doing things. That tap it all out, get there, and I see Mike Bolt, who was the second hippie who delivered the cup last night. You got Phil Pritchard and Mike Bolt. If I ever see him again, I'm like, Mike, when did you've been growing that hair for about 5 years? So Mike was there. It's awesome. So Mike was there. I say, hey, Mike, sorry, man. I dented it last night. Poets fell into the wall, but I straightened out. He goes, worry about it. He says, we replaced that probably 3 or 4 times this summer. So when I saw Big Kubel drop it, I think, oh, well, there's the first of many dents.
First of many.
Going to take this summer. So, yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure that thing takes
on and on. I tell you the stories. It just brings back great memories of going through runs and watching it and listening to other guys talk about the old stories.
I'll tell you what, Dave. I'm sure we'll find some time to get you back on the station this summer. We can go over lots of cup stories, man, because you're a great storyteller, and I'd love to hear a lot of them. But thank you so much for your time today, Dave, and have a great summer. Thank you so much.
Thanks, guys. You too. Talk soon.
All right. There he goes, Dave Reed, longtime NHLer, two-time Stanley Cup champion. All right, we got to fly.
Good stories. Yeah, we got to go.
Great stories, but we got to fly. We got to fly. Final segment of Leafs Lunch coming up next. You give me food. Welcome back into Leafs Lunch. I'm Mike DiStefano. Got Frank Corrado, former NHL defenseman, or former Maple Leafs defenseman,
That's
with
right.
me, filling in for Julia Teixeira.
Let's bring it home, buddy. What do we
got? Let's bring it home. Well, so the one storyline that has been completely put away for the last little bit because, well, the Stanley Cup final is always at the forefront. I think the Hall of Fame announcement's coming today. They're announcing the guys who are going to be in the Hall of Fame this year's inductees.
So who's eligible? Who do we got? Who's eligible? So, like, anyone new? Like, who's new? Who's first ballot?
Your guys, former teammates, the Sedin twins. You've got Lou, who's also a first-time eligible. Henrik Zetterberg, first-time eligible. You see any of those guys getting in on the first ballot?
I think all four of them could be first ballot Hall of Famers, could they not?
All four. I mean, they could be. The problem is
Zetterberg. You don't think Zetterberg's a first ballot Hall of Famer?
It's not that, but there's only X amount of guys who they can put in. X amount of people.
Like, so how many people get in per year?
Carolyn also out there. I want to say, is it five? Five.
Okay, so there's four right there. There's four right there, and pick someone who didn't get in before.
McGillney, Alfredson. Caroline Ouellette is out there. I think Jennifer Botterill is also a potential first-time eligible. There's a lot of guys. A lot of people, man. Hockey's in a good spot. There's been many, many legends. We got to fly, though, Frankie. Fun show today. We'll be right back here at noon to get right back at it, my friend. If you missed any of today's show, you can find it on tsn1050.ca or wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Mike DiStefano for Frank Corrado. You'll be listening to Leafs Lunch Gameplay with Matt Koss next.